Hey, and welcome back to the Bill Bennett Show. Thoughtful conversation about the news of the day. We address the existential threats to America, and we talk about Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets.
Right, because we haven't discussed that at all yet on the show.
We need another hour on that.
Right. Well, and a lot of teams have already done their spring ball for college football.
Yeah.
We're getting close to June. You've heard rumors of an early release of Phil Steele's magazine. I have not been able to confirm that yet, but I'm on it. Okay. I'm on the case.
Joining me today is Larry Elder. Larry is an author, columnist, talk radio host, former attorney. He ran for governor of California, and he's currently running for president 2024. Well, I want everybody to listen closely to Larry Elder and his remarks about reparations. I think we're going to hear a lot about this. I frankly think it's ridiculous. But I think we're going to hear a lot about it because not only because of California, but I think you're going to see this in other states as well. So we'll pay attention to that. A few other things occur to me you may not have noticed. A lot of people think Republicans have a very good chance of getting the Senate back in 2024. Joe Manchin is being challenged in West Virginia by the governor, Jim Justice. And this is a very strong Republican state. Justice is a Republican.
Right.
West Virginia went for Trump, I think, by 20 points or more. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But then there's also this rumor that Charlie Baker, who is a kind of liberal Republican governor of Massachusetts, you can't be that conservative and be governor of Massachusetts, may challenge Elizabeth Warren. And polls show him double-digit lead over her. He was a popular governor. We don't know if he'll run, but that's another one that could happen. Arizona, of course, is interesting. Kristen Sinema. Did you see any of the Trump town hall on CNN?
Parts of it, yes.
I watched the whole thing.
Okay.
Mrs. Bennett and I watched it. It was fascinating.
I mean,
he's a force. He's good. Mm-hmm, he's a force of nature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, people who loved him loved it.
Yep.
People who, and they said, that's why we love him.
Yep.
He's tough. He's strong.
So call it like he sees it.
He's not embarrassed about anything. He answers everything. People who hate him said, that's why we hate him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was making fun of the woman in the department store in the civil case. Mm-hmm. He didn't really take a side in the Ukraine war. He just wanted to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He still thinks the election of 2020 was illegitimate and stolen and, all sorts of other heresies. However, I mean, what was interesting was that they held it at St. Anselm's College in New Hampshire. I don't know if you noticed from watching excerpts, but if you watched the whole thing, it's a very conservative audience.
Right, yep.
Mm-hmm. Catholic, white people either identified themselves, I think, either as undecided, unaffiliated, or Republican.
Right.
And so the questions lead into him. He got a lot of balls over the plate. Interesting that CNN did that, and they are getting blasted.
Of course.
By other liberal media. Why did you give, this platform to Trump?
Right.
And he kind of overwhelmed Caitlin Collins, overwhelms all these reporters. It was a tour de force. It was very impressive. And I turned to Mrs. Bennett and I said, I don't know if he can win the general, but I miss him. And the one thought that kept coming into my head was alertness ratio of Trump to Biden. I mean, he did not look like a doddering old man.
It's not even close.
He looked like a tough, alert, smart, tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so advantage there, Trump, big time. Let me say that it just occurs to me in saying that there's a fair amount of pressure now for a debate on the Democrat side. Biden has said he will not have debates. I predict Bobby Kennedy's numbers are going to go up.
Okay.
He's at 19%. I'll bet he's up at 25% within a couple of months.
All right.
If he stays in the race and continues to be visible. We'll make it harder for Biden to refuse that debate. Anyway, your comments?
Well, number one, I mean, you talk about how impressive former President Trump was. I think, to me, the first thing that impressed me was the fact that he did it on CNN anyway. Because he's super calculated in it. because he knows that one of the things that draws people to him the most is that he calls out the media bias, and he's not afraid to do it. So it didn't surprise me that his first town hall to kind of kick off this 2024 campaign would be what many who support him would call enemy territory, with, by the way, the first news organization that he called fake news CNN.
That's right.
That he would have them
right.
do it.
That was the wrestling thing,
yeah,
right?
Of course he would have CNN. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why would you do that? Why would you do that? And then you watch it and you're like, well, this is why he does it. Because, you know, do they really want to talk issues with him without their bias? And I don't think that they do. I don't. No. And the
bias showed.
Yeah. And most of them can't help, you know, but to show right. it. And I think he knows that and he believes it. The other thing, is understanding that he sees everything as how can we make the best deal possible? Like when he talked about the abortion issue and said, you know, Roe versus Wade gave pro-life some sort of negotiation tool.
Yeah.
Everything is, okay, how can, and isn't it at
it's
some
same
point.
Same thing on Ukraine.
Yeah. Isn't right. that at some point what we want, like to work together to
let's
get
make a deal? Well,
deal
he's
possible.
A business guy.
Yeah.
And he said that's the way, he admitted that's the way he thinks.
Exactly. That is, everything is, you know, the deal. And then, like you said, you know, you listen to him talk, and there's a reason why, you know, what he says resonates with people. There's a reason why a lot of people who voted for him the first time around were a quiet vote, you know, especially in minority communities, because he speaks in a way that resonates with everyone. And, you know, or at least with the everyday person, right? And in a way that's common sense. And he's able to do that on CNN. And so when you kind of compare that with the obvious bias versus the real talk that he provides, you know, it comes in that impressive, it shows itself in that impressive performance. But it's not the impressive performance that makes people, you know, pull back. It's when he goes a little too far.
Well, do you have an example?
When he goes, it was obvious that the bias was coming out with the moderator. It was obvious that she was, you know, doing what they do. But then to come back, you're a nasty woman. You're a nasty.
Right.
That's where it's like,
it says to the audience, she's a nasty woman. She's a nasty woman.
You're already winning. You yeah. don't have to do that. You're already proving your point.
That's the part you don't need.
That's the part you don't need.
See, it seems to me if he's going to have a winning campaign, it ought to be as if he's going to listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I ran a pretty good country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the old thing, misery index, Reagan. You know, you're mm-hmm. better off now than you were before. Are you better off now under Biden than you were under me?
Mm-hmm.
Immeasurable. I mean, it's a huge
right.
difference.
Not even close.
So, and stay away from the personal,
mm-hmm.
and don't insult women.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch that, and don't call the woman who just won a $5 million judgment against you a whack job.
Right. He can't
no,
do
I
it.
No, I see, but you're laughing. You're laughing, see?
No.
You're not angry.
No, I'm not.
You're not particularly a Trump voter, but you're laughing.
Yeah, see? Right. No, it's, and he could do it, except he can't do it. Like, he could win, if and even if he were to go back and say, listen, we had a lot of wins in my first four, and I know that the hardships was self-induced. I'll pull back on that. I'm not going to be as nasty. But he won't do
no.
it. He won't. It's not him.
I have relatives and friends who say, hey, you know Trump. I know Trump likes you. He likes me fine. He likes my sons better.
Yeah,
well, Miss Bennett better.
That seems to be.
Yeah, but he likes me. Tell him to stop, you know, doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
He's not going to stop.
He's not going to stop.
He is who he is. He's 76.
Mm-hmm.
You don't stop being who you are when you get 76.
You're listening to The Bill Bennett Show.
Bill Bennett Show.
Larry Elder joins us now. Larry, reparations, California. okay. All right. What? Why is it funny? Why are you laughing at it?
Well, the whole concept is pretty ridiculous. I mean, isn't it? I've called reparations the extraction of money from people who were never slave owners to be given to people who were never slaves. California wasn't even a slave state. It was admitted in 1850 as a free state. The idea that people in California today should pay money to me because I'm Black for things that were done to my ancestors by other people is on its face ridiculous. So how do the California task force get around the inconvenient problem that California was admitted as a free state? Here's what they're doing, Bill. They're saying that the wealth gap that blacks have compared to whites, I presume, is due to other factors, such as redlining, the alleged failure to lend money to black people for real estate, for homes, for apartments, mass incarceration, the alleged warehousing of black people behind bars, and over-policing, however you define that. Never mind that, as far as over-policing is concerned, recent polls show that blacks want the police manpower to remain the same or to be higher. Regarding mass incarceration, it is true that the black men are disproportionately behind bars, and that's because black men disproportionately commit crime, usually against other black people. And regarding the redlining thing, what is your evidence that the wealth gap had to do with redlining? You don't have to prove that somebody in your family was a victim of redlining or mass incarceration over policing. You just have to be black. Now, regarding the wealth gap, let's talk a little bit about that. There were laws in California, Bill, that prevented Japanese from owning farmland. I kid you not. There were laws in the Bay Area that prevented Chinese from competing against whites in the Chinese in the laundry business. Yet when you look at the household income of the average Japanese American and the household income of the average Chinese American, it is higher than the average income of a white American. How can that be? That's because they believe in strong families, believe in education, believe in hard work, believe in living below their values, believe in investing. They're taking advantage of the opportunities that this greatest country that God ever created have given people. That's what they're doing. And that's what I would urge Black Americans to do. Instead of trying to redress grievances, attack other people for the sin of being white, we ought to be talking about the real problem in the Black community, Bill, which is fatherlessness. 70% of Black kids enter the world today without a father in the home married to the mother. And I always try to use left-wing sources whenever I can. Barack Obama once said, a kid raised without a father is five times more likely to be poor. Now, that's a far bigger factor in the so-called wealth gap that the task force is trying to attack. Secondly, what about the educational gap? You used to be Secretary of Education. You know what the National Report Card is, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. 85% of Black eighth graders, these are 13-year-old kids, can neither read nor do math at grade level. There were 13 public high schools in Baltimore, Bill, where 0% of the kids can do math at grade level, and another half a dozen where only 1% can. That's half of all the public high schools in Baltimore that are all located in the inner city. That is a national scandal that we ought to be addressing, but this task force does not do any of that.
Okay, that's a very good series of points. I couldn't agree with you more. You referenced my experience, which was kind and generous of you. I'll just tell one quick story encapsulating a lot of what you said, and that has to do with crime. When I was drug czar, I went up to Boston, spent the day visiting the neighborhoods where the drug problem was the worst, going to schools in those neighborhoods, asking the people, many of them black, you know, what they thought. And they said, drug dealers, you got to get them off the street. They get arrested, and then they're back out on the street. You know, we don't want to let our kids out to play. They're a menace, and you know, we're not being helped by this justice system. That night, I gave a speech at Harvard, and all the questions, Larry, were, why don't you legalize drugs? Why don't you make them more available to people? Exactly the opposite of what the people in the community were saying. Your point about wanting, you know, wanting more law enforcement. They wanted more law enforcement in the community. The Harvard crowd didn't want any enforcement at all.
Right.
I noticed when they were setting up all the marijuana stuff in California, I think part of the provision was that black-owned businesses would have a priority in getting the marijuana business. Oh, good. Lucky you are to be able to be in the marijuana business. Anyway, your point is absolutely right. How do you reintroduce fathers? How does this happen?
A couple of things, though, real quickly about what you said about the marijuana thing. The reason for the movement to legalize marijuana in California was to get rid of the black market. And because they've taxed and taxed and taxed, the black market is still there. So the whole reason backfired. Regarding fathers, again, I like to use left-wing sources whenever I can, one of which is the rapper Tupac Shakur. Yeah. He once said, I know for a fact that had I had a father, I would have been more disciplined. I would have been more confident. A woman cannot raise a child by herself. This is what he said. He also, by the way, talked about law enforcement. He said, we need the police more than anybody else. We don't want drug dealers. We don't want murderers in our community. We want the police more than anybody else. I mean, he almost sounds like a conservative Republican. Now, how do you get this back into the home? The first thing is to talk about it. We don't even talk about the damage when you're being raised by a father. Let me finish the Obama quote. He said, a kid raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in jail. Again, we're not even talking about it. I believe with our welfare state, the war on poverty launched in the mid-60s by Lyndon Johnson, we have incentivized women to marry the government, and we've incentivized men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. We need to rethink the welfare state. Remember when Bill Clinton passed welfare reform? The welfare rolls declined by almost 50%, a far steeper decline than even the most optimist predicted, because a whole bunch of people who were able-bodied and able-minded got off the couch and went to work.
What about the churches? The Black community still seems to have a greater affinity for the churches and the church than the white community. Why isn't that a force for moral regeneration in the direction you're talking about?
It's a great question, and it certainly ought to be. When I ran for Governor Bill, the most contentious interview I had was a virtual interview with about 6 or 8 Black pastors. And everything was going reasonably well until I suggested that fatherlessness was a bigger problem than the alleged police brutality. And they went ballistic and began attacking me. And I said, you people are role models. You set the agenda. And you're ignoring the 10,000-pound elephant in the room with this fatherlessness. And you're pushing this lie that the police are engaging in systemic racism. And it's a lie, Bill. It's not only just a lie. It's also a lie that has tragic consequences. Yeah. Pullback is called the Ferguson effect or the George Floyd effect. They don't engage in proactive policing. You've seen it in L.A., in New York, Chicago, Milwaukee, Philadelphia. Crime goes up, homicides goes up, and almost always the victim of the crime and the homicides are the very Black people that people on the left claim they care about. The other thing that happens is this. You're a young Black man. You've gotten a steady diet that the police are engaging in systemic racism, whether it's from Barack Obama or Al Sharpton or Eric Holder or MSNBC, and you get pulled over. Why in the world would you cooperate? Virtually all of these high-profile shootings and deaths would have been avoided had the suspect/civilian simply complied. They're not complying. And why would you when you begin to give a steady diet that this guy behind me with the flashing lights is going to harm me if I cooperate, so I'm not going to cooperate.
I remember the younger Jesse Jackson, we're about the same age, said one of the first things he said in an interview, and I remember shaking my head, he said, what's the most important thing you can teach young people? He said, challenge authority. Not a great idea. Sometimes you need to, but, you know, one of the lessons you teach your kids, especially your sons, is if you're stopped by the police, be respectful. You know, you can insist on fairness, but be respectful. Don't give lip. Don't give attitude to the cops.
You know, Bill, a more rational, sane Jesse Jackson once said this, I believe it was in the early 90s. He says the crime has gotten so bad that when I'm alone at night and I hear footsteps behind me, and I turn around and I see white people, I feel relieved. I give you Jesse Jackson.
And my
dad told me, Larry, when you're pulled over by the police, make sure your left hand is at 10 o'clock. Your right hand is at 2 o'clock. Say yes, sir. Say no, sir. Say yes, ma'am. Say no, ma'am. My dad wasn't a biologist, but he could tell a female cop from a male cop. He said, make sure your paperwork is in order. And if you feel you're mistreated, get a badge number and you and I can deal with it while we're both alive. And that's the lesson that Black people should be getting, but they're not getting, often because there's no father in the home to give them that message.
Yeah, no, I remember that Jesse thing. You're very smart to use these citations from the left to prove your points. That's very, very important. Let's go back to reparations. I take it, even though, you know, on its face, it's kind of ridiculous for the reason you said, people who weren't slave owners being forced to pay money to people who were never slaves, that this thing has some legs. I want to talk about other states and the national election. But does it have legs in California?
It has legs among Black people in California. I suspect a greater percentage of whites and white Democrats support reparations in California simply because it's a more liberal state. I remember Congressman John Conyers from Detroit, who served forever. And every year, every 2 years, he would introduce a resolution for reparations. And he was laughed at. Nobody joined it. That was probably about 60 years ago. And now the majority of Black people support reparations. The majority of white people do not. And that's why after this panel suggested $1.25 million for every Black resident in California, guess who said he rejects their recommendation? Gavin Newsom, the very guy that allowed the task force to be set up. He had no blooming idea they were going to come back with a number that emptied the vault. Here in California, we have a $20 billion budget deficit. The entire budget is $300 billion. The $1.2 billion could come to $800 billion, 2.5 times the budget, and right. $1.5 trillion unfunded pension liability. We don't have any money. So Gavin Newsom said, holy bleep. And now he's renounced the recommendation that the panel he set up to make recommendations made.
What's he going to do? I mean, it goes to the legislature first, right?
Right.
And it seems to me the legislature is probably not going to really challenge fundamentally what the panel recommended, will it?
I think it will, because there was a proposal for single payer here in California, which would have been $400 billion a year. And even the left-wing legislatures, and we know we have a supermajority of Democrats in the Senate and in the Assembly, even they said that number was jaw-dropping. So I got a feeling they're going to say the same thing regarding this. Gavin Newsom wants to run for president, if not this cycle, then maybe the next one. And he knows that reparations is an electoral loser. And he's trying to position himself as something less than a California loon.
So rejection means rejection of the number or rejection of the whole idea? Will the legislature say, okay, 100,000 per person?
Yeah, you're asking me to crawl into the mind of Gavin Newsom and the left-wing legislature here in California. I don't know. If you hear Gavin Newsom's quote, it almost sounds incomprehensible. He said, no, it's more than about cash payments, so I reject the cash payments. It's more about investments in this, that, and the other. Half of our budget goes to education, so we're investing, to use that word, more before in education, K through 12, and we're getting worse results. 75% of Black third graders, Black third grade boys, cannot read at grade proficiency, even though we're spending more money than ever. The answer, of course, is to have school choice, so the money follows the student rather than the other way around. And because Gavin Newsom and the Democrats are in bed with the teachers union, they adamantly oppose school choice. The one method that could improve things, they're not even considering, which is school choice.
What will they do then? What will happen? I mean, there's a cost, isn't there, to him politically if this thing doesn't go anywhere, if there's no money?
No, I don't think there's going to be cost to him. I mean, I ran against him in the recall election. He won by over 20 points. Then he ran for his reelection, and he won that by almost 20 points. It doesn't seem to matter how bad crime gets. Doesn't seem to matter how bad homelessness gets. Doesn't seem to matter that we've lost 500,000 net people in California in the last 2.5 years. It doesn't seem to matter how bad the schools are. Doesn't seem to matter how bad the crime is. I don't know what it'll take. I made all these arguments when I ran, and it didn't seem to do any good. All they did was say over and over again, and by they, I mean Barack Obama and Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders and Senator Warren. They all said the same thing. Stop the Republican takeover. Biden flew out, Bill, and said Larry Elder is the closest thing to a Trump clone as I've ever seen. I don't know if that was supposed to be praiseworthy or insulting. Either way, that's all they said. They never said Gavin has been doing a good job the way he shut down the state, ignoring science on COVID, that the kids have now lost
the
of learning, of reading, and of math. They never said any of that. They just said, stop the Republican takeover, and it worked.
Didn't someone call you a white supremacist?
Well, the actual quote was Larry Elder's headline in the LA Times by a writer. Her initials are Erica D. Smith. Oops. Headline was Larry Elder is the black face of white supremacy. Subheadline, you've been warned. And when my race was over, I finished my contract with Salem Communications, my radio deal, and I invited the woman on my show to talk about what makes me the black face of white supremacy. And not too surprisingly, she declined.
Yeah, I am I'm shocked. Okay, so he rejects the recommendations of the panel. The legislature rejects it, and there's no political cost to him. I saw a couple of people. It could just be the news highlights and not broadly felt, but saw a couple of people say, we get money, we get reparations, or we don't vote.
Right. I saw that. Yeah. One of the reasons that that Gavin Newsom is doing this is because he is essentially just buying votes. What's happened is the stranglehold that Democrats have had over blacks is beginning to slip a little bit. Donald Trump got 8% of the black vote in 2016. He got 12% in 2020. That's a 50% increase. And he got 20% of the black male vote. And recently I saw a poll that found Biden support among blacks has fallen from almost 90% to barely over 50%. So they're in trouble. The most loyal part of the Democrat base are blacks. And the most loyal part of that are black females. You lose blacks at that level. By lose, I mean, if the Republicans were able to get about 20-25% of the black vote, the Democrats are toast at the presidential level, and they know it. That's why they're pushing this reparations nonsense. And Biden has never signed on to it. What he signed on to was a agreement to study it. Kamala Harris said she wants to study it. By the way, Barack Obama, his entire career, has opposed reparations, gave an interview in 2016, reiterated his opposition. Notice you haven't heard a peep from him. And the media is going to be interested in asking him his opinion. And the reason Obama's not giving his opinion is he knows he will be canceled. He's very popular right now among black people. But if he takes the wrong position on reparations, he will be canceled. And he knows it. So as a result, he's popped off on this issue. But for reasons that I find very interesting, he hasn't said one word about the growing movement on the part of black people to support reparations. I wonder why.
That's very interesting. Because Claude and I were speaking before we got to you, Larry, and I think you're right about disappointment and more in all communities, including the black community, with Biden. But does that translate more votes for Trump?
The more interesting thing to me is when we look at all these cities, like you had pointed out, Mr. Elder, that are ran by Democrats and have been ran by Democrats for decades, where whether it's black economics, black education suffers repeatedly. How do we make that connection has seemed to be the issue to me.
And Claude, that's one of the reasons I'm running. I'm going to make that connection. There's a direct link between Democratic policies, failed policies, and these things we're talking about, poor schools, and also crime. This is a jaw-dropping stat. A black male between the ages of 10 and 43, Claude, is 13 times more likely to be murdered than a white male in the same demo. And the reason, again, for this is the lack of fathers in the home. And we don't talk enough about that. And I'm going to draw a straight line between that and these Democrat policies that essentially pay women to marry the government and allow men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. Once more and more blacks hear this and realize there's a connection between this, and the high cost of living. In California, where I am, the average price of a home is 175% above the national average. Blacks are leaving San Francisco, blacks are leaving Los Angeles, and the primary reason is they cannot buy a house. Why? Because the Democrats are in bed with the environmentalists, and they hate any kind of construction, and as a result, a million fewer housing units that would have been built in California had it not been for the stranglehold that left-wing environmentalists have on the Democratic Party. There's a direct link between your pulling that lever for the Democratic Party and why you're leaving your city.
We've talked about this a lot. We have a very successful builder from California who has described this to us and says people just can't afford to buy a house. So they're leaving. Well, if blacks leaving California, where are they going?
They're going the same place white people are going to, Texas.
Texas,
Florida, Tennessee.
Okay. let's do more politics on this, politics of race, because I'm fascinated by what you're saying, and I learned from it. Is Biden's attempt at Biden's work or non-work at the border, this disgrace at the border, is this to make the country permanently Democrat? Is that the motive for it?
Of course it is. He reversed the Donald Trump policies right away. He even said during the 2020 debate, there's going to be a quote unquote surge to the border. The idea is to flood the country with a bunch of illegal aliens so that there will ultimately be pressure on the Republicans to come to the table and do some sort of mass amnesty deal. I've said this for years, Bill. If illegal aliens turn legal residents, turn citizens, turn voters, vote Republican, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Regarding the effect, however, of illegal immigrations on blacks, the Civil Rights Commission did a study, and both the liberals, the moderates, and the conservatives all agreed that the group most hurt by illegal aliens are black people living in the inner city with high school and less education, because most of the illegal aliens don't have very much education. And they put downward pressure to the tune of almost $2,000 a year on their salaries. And there are a million fewer black people working than would otherwise be the case if it weren't for the availability of illegal alien labor. So the group most hurt by illegal aliens are the very black and brown people, people on the left claim that they care about.
Yeah, I've wondered where the Congressional Black Caucus is on this, why we haven't heard from them. And I've also wondered why the Sierra Club hasn't talked about the environmental damage. If you look at the unbelievable, you know, mess that people are making at or near the border. But they seem quiet. They seem quiet as well. So, but back to my question, it's to get these illegals in. And then let's just take one state, Texas, to make Texas blue. If Texas is blue, Republicans never win presidential elections. Is that the game?
That's exactly what the game is. I mean, this is a 50-50 country. You add 8 million illegal aliens, which is once Title 42 goes away, and it just now has gone away. And eventually, some number of them become voters. And there was a union leader with the largest union. And he said that after Obama got elected, like two out of every three Hispanic voted for him. And if you project that number over the course of millions of illegal aliens, he said, we'll have a governing coalition for the long term. His term, not mine. His name is Eliseo Medea. We'll have a governing coalition for the long term. That's the whole game. One more time. If these people would likely vote Republican, we wouldn't be having the conversation. My brother once put it, the borders would be shut tighter than Ed's hat band.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that is the game. And how do you stop it? I mean, you obviously stop it by, you know, having the right border policies like Trump had.
But
they're gone, and 5 million people are already in.
Right.
So what do you do?
And the odds are, Bill, we'll never get them out. But we don't have to give them legal status. But we're not going to get them out. Can you imagine what the ACLU will do, what the media will do with images of people being dragged out of their homes and crossing somewhere? It would create such civil disobedience on the part of the activists who'd be stopping the police from doing their jobs that our country couldn't stomach it. But that's
how long before they vote? How long before they're allowed to vote?
Well, it depends on what kind of deal that the weak-kneed Republicans ultimately agree to. And eventually some number of them will come to the table and do some sort of quote comprehensive immigration reform, translation, amnesty, which is what the left wants.
Wow. So do you predict this is what will happen?
Frankly, I don't think so. I think so many Republicans are now dug in. One of the many things that I believe Donald Trump has done is give the Republicans backbone we hadn't had before, a fighting spirit that we hadn't had before. So I think now there are so many Republicans who recognize that there is a political downfall in supporting amnesty that they won't do it. So we're going to have this stalemate indefinitely. But I don't believe that the illegal aliens here are going to get citizenship and ultimately get to vote. I think DACA is now dead in its tracks as a result of that as well. So I think our side has dug in more than before. And one of the reasons we dug in more than before is because of Donald Trump.
Let's talk about Biden. Will Biden be the candidate?
If he can fog up a mirror, Biden will be the candidate. And if he can't fog up a mirror, Bill, the candidate will be Kamala Harris. Trust me, they're not going to dropkick Kamala Harris. As I mentioned
before,
Democrats are the most loyal part of their base. And black women love them some Kamala Harris. I saw a poll in the LA Times that had her support among blacks at 70%. It wasn't broken down by gender, but I assure you, she's even more popular among black females than black males. And I read a lot of black press, including a publication called The Griot, and they're angry that Kamala Harris is being made fun of because of her cackle. They think it's sexist and racist. They also believe Joe Biden has given her thankless tasks, including getting to the root causes of immigration.
Yeah.
And they believe that they put her in an untenable position, and they're angry about that. And if they drop kick Kamala Harris, especially Bill, in favor of some white dude like Mayor Pete or Gavin Newsom, black women will be so angry they won't vote Republican. They just won't vote, thereby ensuring whoever the Republican nominee is, he or she is going to win in 2024. And they cannot afford to run that risk. So they're stuck with Kamala Harris if Joe Biden is unable to get across the finish line.
Is she a worse candidate for president than Joe Biden?
Well, I don't think
he could still fog up a mirror.
Yeah, I don't think we should underestimate Kamala Harris. Remember, she ran for DA in San Francisco. She got elected. She ran for AG in California. She got elected. She ran for senator, got elected. She had a disastrous presidential campaign. She dropped out before the first contest. But she did want to run, and she did participate in some of the debates. And they're already rehabilitating her. I saw a show, I think it was on NBC on the weekend. Jonathan Capehart, who's a Washington Post columnist, has a show on MSNBC. And he was talking about what a wonderful person she is and how she went out on the campaign trail after Roe v. Wade got overturned. And there was an article in the New York Times talking about what a great job she's been doing. So they're rehabilitating her right now. Because they know that even if she's not the nominee, she'll be the nominee shortly thereafter Biden gets elected. He's not going to finish four years. So he'll hand over the baton to her. So Republicans will be smart to remind Americans that when they vote in 2024, they're really voting for a President Kamala Harris shortly after Joe Biden gets elected. So they're trying to rehabilitate her and make her look better than her poll number suggests that she is right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't see any way that they could drop kick her, as you put it, or pass over her for someone else without alienating the most loyal part of their base. That was the base that put Biden in, right, in South Carolina.
That's
what's
right.
his name? James
Clyburn.
Yeah, Jim Clyburn,
he extracted a demand that in order for me to support you in the South Carolina primary. And remember, this was after Bernie Sanders won the Nevada caucuses. And for one shining moment, he was a party front runner, a self-described Democrat socialist. And they knew he could win. So all of a sudden, they collapsed around Joe Biden, who was just limping along. I think it was David Axelrod who even said he was Mr. Magooing his way through the primary. And suddenly he became the guy.
And he was polling fifth, I think.
Something
that
like
point.
That. Yeah, right. Yeah. And the promise that Clyburn got was that that he would have a black female black vice president and his first Supreme Court nominee be also a black female. By the way, Bill, one quick thing. I know we've talked about reparations, but Kamala Harris is from California. Her father is from Jamaica and admitted that they owned slaves in his past. Her mother is from India. So does Kamala Harris get a check, Bill, or does she cut a check? How does that work?
Both. It's like a check, and then you sign it over to someone else. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Claude, do you have any comments, questions?
I do wonder, how do we shift the American voters, and how do we get those who may be in the middle but leaning left off of this transgender women in sports, all the things that honestly does not even impact everyday life? How do we get their attention from that to the important things?
Well, Claude, if I had the answer to that, you'd be talking to me from Sacramento, because I'd be governor of California rather than talk my home in L.A. But here's what I think. And this is why I'm running, and I'm asking people to go to elderforpresident.com and throw something in the tip jar. You know my story about my father. My father never knew his biological father. His irresponsible, illiterate mother threw him out of the house when he was 13 years old. Athens, Georgia, Jim Crow South, the beginning of the Great Depression. I defy you to find somebody who had a hand dealt like that. My dad, when I was growing up, cleaned toilets. He had two full-time jobs cleaning toilets. When he was 47 years old, he saved his nickels and dimes and started a little cafe near downtown L.A., which he ran until his early 80s. My dad retired. He had a net worth of a little bit under $1 million.
Wow.
bought the restaurant property, property next to it, and the house we still have in our family. My dad was a lifelong Republican, and my mom, however, was a lifelong Democrat. My dad was a Nixon guy. My mother couldn't stand Nixon. My dad was a Reagan guy. My mother couldn't stand Reagan. My dad had a picture of Ronald Reagan on his side of the bed in the bedroom. But they didn't call each other Nazis or fascists. Nobody said you only care about the rich. You don't care about the poor. They would argue politics civilly, respectfully. And I believe I can do that. My late older brother, Kirk, was a lifelong Democrat. As much as I tried, I couldn't get him to re-register. But we could talk civilly. We disagreed civilly. I don't see why we cannot do that. One side thinks the other side is wrong. I believe we feel that way about the left. But the other side thinks we're not only wrong, but we're bad people, if not evil people. I don't know where that happened. I don't know why that has happened. But I think I can calm things down and get people to talk about their disagreements civilly, because we are all Americans. We have more in common than we have apart. We should appreciate the fact that we are here. Much of the 8 billion people in the world would trade places with us in a heartbeat if they could.
I think we'll leave it there. That's Larry Elder. Yeah. I think one of the best, clearest voices in America right now. And one more time, Elder for President. Where do people go?
ElderForPresident.com. ElderForPresident.com. Throw a little something in the tip jar. We've got a country to save.
Fabulous. Larry, thank you very much.
It's been my
well
pleasure.
Done.
Thanks, Bill.
Very well
Thanks,
done.
God. Appreciate
thank
it.
You. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, that does it for today's show. To catch up on previous episodes of the show, go to thebillbennettshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter at William J. Bennett. You can like me on Facebook. Just search Bill Bennett. Feel free to email the show. I'd love to hear from you. It's BillBennettPodcast@gmail.com. Please share the podcast with your family and friends. We'll catch up next week.